Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Yeah, it is busy, man. There is so much going on today. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Thanks a lot for jumping in. Ireland, did you play a round of golf today? Is that where you were?
No. I practiced a little, but it's not going to help. You know, my big rematch against Travis is a week from Saturday, and Travis is better than me. So I need to like play a little bit over my head to beat him. It does not look good. I'll keep you posted, but I think very soon I'm going to have to do the, because what we bet is, what Travis and I bet is, the loser has to do a double shift. So one day soon I'm going to have to do the morning show and then come back and do our show. I've done it once before. It's a long day.
Yeah, but if I do it once.
If I upset him, if I pull off the upset, then you get Travis for a day.
Oh, okay. I'll take Travis for a day.
So we'll see what happens. That's a week. Yeah, that's a week from Saturday.
Okay,
but
good.
Can I talk a little bit about how bad my Dodgers all-time team is?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I want to go full Steinbrenner on my team and just cut them all. I mean, they were awful last night. They got three hits against Sedano's team, three hits with all these supposed, you know, Corey Bellinger and Adrian Beltre and Pedro Guerrero. All these, you know what they were? They were a bunch of one-hit wonders. They couldn't hit Kershaw. These guys couldn't hit water if they fell out of a boat.
Right, and Sandy Koufax threw a good game.
What are you talking about? He gave up a home run to Corey Seager. He gave up a home run to a lefty.
Yeah,
I would have yanked him if I knew how to do it.
He allowed just two runs. You would think that with your high-powered lineup, you would be able to score enough to overcome a two-run deficit.
You would think. Yeah, but my team stunk. I've got a what's that line? What do they say? Slappy McPop-up I should have taken.
That's Slappy McPop-up. That's what we used to call Juan Pierre.
Yeah, my guys couldn't get it out of the infield.
Yeah.
You won your game.
I did win. Yeah, you lost your game to George Sedano 2-0. I ended up jumping out to a lead on Sedano before Dine Drysdale kind of melted down. It ended up 7-6, and Jeff Shaw hung on for the save. So I'm 1-0. Sedano is
1-1, and I'm 0-1.
You're 0-1, right.
Right, and tonight it's
you
me,
and I play.
Yeah, it's me against you, and if you win, I'm out.
And it's Drysdale versus Koufax, teammates.
Yeah, but based on last night's performance, if I could bet mythical money, I'd bet it on your team. My team is a bunch of banjo hitting.
It's really
stiffs.
Bad to be the favorite in these games, isn't it?
Yeah, apparently, because Sedano was the big favorite in the Lakers all-time game, and he didn't win a game.
Yep.
And if I lose tonight, I'm going out the same way.
I'm a sleeper, man. I'm a sleeper in every one of these games. I am a sleeper. I was
4-1. You have the only chance to be undefeated in both the all-time Dodgers and all-time Lakers tournaments. Sedano's coming on with us in a few minutes, by the way. So we can talk.
Yeah.
You know, I was surprised that, I know we got a list of things to get into, but Sedano did not like that NFL story today. You know, the one where...
Didn't like the NFL story in what respect?
Let me tell you what the NFL story is. Our buddy Jim Trotter, who now writes for the NFL Network, Mason and I first met Jim when he wrote for the NFL and covered the Chargers for the San Diego Union Tribune back in the 90s. So we've known him for a long time. Really good dude. He is reporting that the owners are going to vote this week, Mace, and this is pretty extraordinary, that they've decided the Rooney Rule doesn't work. That the Rooney Rule is you must, if you have an opening for a GM or a head coach, you must interview and consider minority candidates.
Right.
But it like, for example,
And the fact is that three of the past 20 openings have gone to a minority. Three of 20 is the actual number.
And two of the three were fired after either 1 year or 2 years.
Right.
But, you know, like my team, the Raiders, Mark Davis didn't even talk to another person. You know, they made up some bogus story to comply with the Rooney Rule, but he was hiring John Gruden the whole time.
Yes.
So they've taken a pretty extraordinary step. If they pass this, they're going to, if they pass it, give a team six spots to move up in the third round of the draft if they hire a black or a minority head coach. And if you hire a black or minority head of football operations, basically a GM, you get to move up 10 spots. So, Mace, if you hire both, if you hire a black GM and a black coach, you get to move up. Like, let's say you were taken, you were the first pick of the third round.
Yep.
You'd move into the middle of the second round.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd move up 16 spots. But Sedano doesn't like it. I'll let him explain why, but okay. I think the heart of his argument is it's just, it reeks of tokenism. And, you know, what they should do
well,
is
not
actually...
But not tokenism. Tokenism is when you interview Eric Bieniemy and you know you're not going to hire him all along. This would be a case of, I think this would be a case of affirmative action.
Right, but I think George's point is, look, why don't you just identify qualified minority candidates earlier? But I don't want to speak for him. Let's see what he has to say. He's coming up in 10 minutes.
All right, the news came out today that with the stay-at-home order somewhat easing right now in Los Angeles as of today. Tomorrow, the Lakers will have a limited access to their training facility in El Segundo.
Which is great news. I watched Chris Paul in the Jump today, and I think they're going to play. I can't guarantee it. I'm probably taking the optimistic view. But when you get the star players and you start to open up the practice facilities – and you've got Adam Silver seeming to want to cut a deal. I think it's looking good. I don't know. You know what I don't know is, and not that this should be a race. These decisions should be based on medical concerns and safety. But you and I have been thinking the whole time that baseball's coming back first.
Yes.
Maybe the NBA beats them.
I don't know how.
Because the NBA starting.
They still need 3 weeks of training camp, right?
Right. So does baseball. And now the NBA is at least opening up camps. Baseball hasn't done that yet.
Well, they're not. There's a difference, though, between opening up camp and opening your facility for limited workouts. Which
yeah,
is
but
what
baseball
the
hasn't
Lakers
even done that, have
did.
They?
No, no. They're planning for spring training in June, 3 weeks in June. I would be shocked if somehow the NBA moved past the Major League Baseball in timeline, only because the Major League Baseball has been so more clear about its timeline. They've got specific plans. We know that there's a 100-page document, Bob Nightingale told us, with all kinds of safety protocols. That doesn't mean that the NBA is not working on exactly the same thing. It's just we haven't heard hard dates, and we don't know exactly.
We haven't heard any dates.
Sam Amick wrote that if the playoffs are not played, there will be a loss of revenue for the NBA of $900 million. They will also lose a whole bunch of that regional sports network money because they will not have played 70 regular season games to reach that financial threshold. So there's an awful lot of money at stake in this. And it seems to me that the thing that makes the most sense is sort of I think we're getting away from the bubble concept and going more towards, at least Sam Amick wrote about this today, a campus approach. In other words, we're going to have a campus where the games are being played. People will be able to come and go, but there will be a whole bunch of testing. There will be a whole bunch of temperature checks. But you won't necessarily be kept from your family for a period of 6 weeks or 7 weeks or however long that takes.
Boy, $900 million if they don't come back. Well, it's, you know, and now it's starting to get a little, I don't know if awkward's the right word, but strange. Like, Arizona and Florida are clearly open for business. Other states aren't. And now you've got to make some decisions here as to what you're going to allow your citizens to do.
Correct.
And, and one thing, all these plans you and I are talking about, maybe we mentioned this yesterday. Maybe the Lakers and the Dodgers never play games in L.A. You know, we got to
totally
be prepared
possible.
For that.
Totally
you know,
possible.
The Dodgers could end up in Arizona. The Lakers could end up in Vegas or Orlando. We just don't know the answers yet.
Did you know, I read something interesting. Did you know that the Strip in Las Vegas is not part of the city of Las Vegas?
I did not know that.
That's the weirdest thing in the world, right? So the mayor of Las Vegas has no control over when the casinos can actually reopen because the Strip is not part of the city of Las Vegas. That's why Vegas is talking about doing all kinds of crazy stuff to try to get the casinos back open. Vegas and Disney World are the two that seem to make the most sense. This is what Amick wrote. He said, Of course, the WWE and UFC is going on in Florida. There have been 42,000 cases in Florida of COVID, 1,827 deaths. But in Orange County, where Orlando is, the cases have been kept mostly under control, 1,500 cases and 36 deaths. So it's not in a, and by the way, those are human lives. So I don't want to gloss over that. But the fact is, it's in an area where it has been more contained. And the counts of people with cases have been kept lower. So that makes it more of an ideal spot, I think, to go to. Plus, you've got the Bob Iger relationship with the NBA, Bob Iger and his relationship with Adam Silver. I just think, in the end, Walt Disney World is probably the one that's going to make the most sense.
Well, you know, you could do it, just to minimize travel, you could do the Western Conference in Vegas and the Eastern Conference in Orlando.
Absolutely could. That's another option, yeah.
Especially, you know, you and I have talked a lot about how you want to control the size of groups.
Yep.
That's one way to do it. Keeping in mind that when your team gets eliminated, it leaves. It leaves
yes.
the campus. So, like, if you send eight teams to Las Vegas and eight teams to Orlando, that becomes a little easier environment to control, I would think. But I'm not privy to those conversations. And I think one thing Adam Silver always does is he says that he's in contact with doctors and medical officials. So,
sure.
I mean, he'll present that when they present that case.
Now, Dwight Howard was on a Zoom press conference today. We've got a little bit of that if you pull that up, Funch. He talks about how frustrated he is and how much he misses basketball right now. And here he is on whether he will report to the Lakers facility soon. So, you know, that's something I hadn't thought about, but, you know, not everybody lives in L.A. year-round. So not everybody is here to report to the Lakers facility tomorrow.
Right. And he was very candid today. Did you listen to any of that?
Yes, I did. Do you want to?
Yeah. I mean, only because he talked about it.
Okay. So here he is on the mother of one of his kids who passed away from COVID.
Okay, well, that's obviously an incredibly sad story, but I was just thinking about Dwight. I now think, and I used to think that the person who fit this description best was Meta World Peace, but I now think Dwight Howard has changed the perception of most basketball fans faster than anyone I've ever seen.
Yeah, I agree.
In other words, people, particularly in L.A., were really down on this guy. And he basically bet on himself. He took a minimum deal. He came in. They said, we want you to just play defense and rebound. And if you can do that, we think you can be a great addition to our team. And the Mace, because I'm around these guys all the time, his teammates love him.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, it's so different from the last time he was here. And you know, which was 2012, wasn't that long ago.
No.
But now he's a key part. If they win it, he's going to get a lot of credit for it. He's going to be a key part of that bench unit that went, you know, obviously LeBron and Anthony Davis will lead the way. But if you talk to LeBron and AD, they bring up Dwight all the time as to what a great addition he's been to that bench.
Yep.
And he's really completely changed the perception of most of the fans I know about what it was even 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways we've all forgotten what happened a few years back. I mean,
good
he's
for him.
Become this version of Dwight. All right, coming up next for you is George Sedano. He apparently doesn't like the proposed NFL plan for increasing the hiring of minority coaches and executives. Also, last night he went 1-1.
Yeah, he beat me and you beat him.
Yes.
Hey, by the way, before we throw it to break, can I do a shout-out real quick?
Yeah, sure.
You know Wyatt Holtz that works
yes.
with us.
Great
Wyatt
guy.
Wyatt is a triplet. Did you know that?
I had no idea.
Yeah, Wyatt's a triplet. And his sister, Leah, is graduating today from San Diego State.
Oh,
who
nice.
Was born on the same day as Wyatt. So he wanted to he asked me to give her a shout-out. So,
cool.
Leah, congratulations. Of course, people are graduating without a ceremony, and she's on that list. But congratulations
to
Leah Holtz, who gets a master's in public health today from San Diego State.
Excellent. All right, George is coming up next, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Hey, what's going on? It's Friday. It's beautiful outside. Good day to go out for a walk. I think now you can actually run on the beach if you want to. You can definitely, if you're a golfer, you can go out and play some golf. Things are lightening up a little bit, thank God. And George Sonano's online right now. Hey, George, what's up, man?
What's up, guys? I'm glad to be where it's all happening.
Yeah, it is all
George,
happening.
I want to be the first to congratulate you for beating my all-time Dodger team last night. I have a bunch of banjo-hitting stiffs. I don't know how closely you watch that game, but I think I hit three balls out of the infield. Clayton Kershaw just baffled my team, and I'm now going full Steinbrenner on them. They are all available for trade, every one of them.
The funny part was then Kershaw came in against Mace and couldn't find the plate in the next
game. Yeah, poor Kersh. I felt really bad for him. Pitching back-to-back games on one night is tough.
Yeah.
Second game of a back-to-back, literally both ends of a doubleheader, is not an easy thing for Kersh. He can't even handle 3 days' rest. Drysdale gave up five for me, so I was very concerned. And then Jeff Shaw didn't look good when he first came in, but I think I ended up hanging on seven to six, George.
Yeah, you were up 7-2 going into the last inning, and then I scored four, and I had a couple on base still. And it was the last out, I believe, was like a long fly ball.
It was.
Warning track, yeah.
It was. Am I on the verge of winning both the NBA 2K and MLB The Show?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you're now in pole position. But, George, I have a couple of questions about your managerial style.
Yeah.
Why did you take Clayton Kershaw out of the game when he was throwing a three-hit shutout?
I did not. Bergman says the computer will automatically take them out after a certain point and amount of pitches.
Bergman, the guy who made Davey Lopes left-handed?
Yeah, I know. Give me a break. I was like, come on, man. There were a number of things that Bergman did that were baffling, including when I was going against Mace. So Kershaw's getting rocked, right?
Yep.
He gives up five runs. He's got a couple of men on. And it brings in, now we all had to pick different teams. John, you got to actually pick the Dodgers, like in their uniform. The game will not allow us all three to be the Dodgers.
So weirdly, John, you got Adam Kolarik that came in as a situational reliever.
Yeah,
for you.
I decided I came actually out of the owner's box, and while Kolarik was warming up, I told him I was quitting the league if they let him pitch, so they brought in Eric Gagne instead.
Yeah, yeah. So I ended up with like some Marlins relief pitcher I'd never heard of, and I was explaining to Bergman, like while we were on the chat, I said, can I pick another Marlins reliever than the one guy I haven't heard of? And he's like, no. And I'm like, what do you mean no? And
yeah, he didn't exactly do a lot of homework on this,
yeah.
But I will take my lumps. My team... I will say to either one of you, my entire roster is available for trade if either one of you would like any of the banjo-hitting stiffs who played last night.
And by the way, there's nothing like Friday Night Baseball on the Twitch. So Twitch, Periscope, Twitter, you can watch tonight's matchup between me and Ireland. It will be teammates Don Drysdale versus Sandy Koufax in a showdown. And if I win, is that it?
No, if you win,
you have to face me. It's double elimination. So once you lose twice, you're out. So
okay,
if I lose to you, I'm out. But then George would have to beat you twice to win.
Right.
Now
it's
now
like
you,
the college
Mace,
World
you,
Series.
You could win it tonight if you beat me and then you beat George.
It's
then
over.
You are. It's that's it.
Do we have two games tonight?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh wow. I'm playing a doubleheader.
I don't know what happens if.
If I beat Mace?
Yeah, I think maybe we go to Saturday.
Bergman says then this Saturday would be the extra game, if necessary.
If necessary, yeah.
Okay, so George...
That's fun. By the way, I'll take anything I can get right now. A little little Twitch.
Hey.
Were you on Twitch last night, George?
I was.
Yeah, it was fun.
We were kind of wondering if you were going to show up at some point.
George and I were tweeting it, or what would you call it, George? We were going we were twitching each other all night.
Yeah.
In the chat. I didn't show up until my game actually started.
Well,
I was in an episode of The Sopranos until then.
Oh, we thought you were, people were asking, and I suggested that maybe you had, you needed to go find some of your pain medication.
Oh, I had that already.
Oh.
I was already covered in that.
What makes you
department.
Think those things are mutually exclusive, George?
Yeah, yeah.
No, that
I mean,
is fair.
The entire run of The Sopranos is a complete blur to me.
Yeah.
I know there's a guy named Sylvie, and I know there's a guy named Paulie, and beyond that, I don't remember much.
It's really good, man.
It is. It's fantastic.
Really
it
good.
Is. It is.
All right,
yeah.
So,
Bargo,
George,
Carlo, by the way, told me that we had 10,000 people watching that yesterday.
That is insane.
I would like to apologize to all 10,000 people for the effort my team put out. This is ridiculous. Was it Ray Kroc who Mace, when he owned the Padres, that started booing his own team? That was me last night in the sixth inning.
You were very upset. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So, George, I saw your tweet reacting to the NFL news, and I wanted to give you a chance to expand on it. Jim Trotter, who's a really good NFL reporter, tweeted earlier today, a little over an hour ago, that NFL owners will vote next week on a resolution that would improve a team's draft position if it hires a person of color as a head coach or GM. Currently, there are only two black GMs and four head coaches of color, which matches a 17-year low. You, George, responded to it. I won't read your tweet, but I'll just say...
You can read it. It's fine.
The first three words you wrote was, where to begin? You're not a fan of this plan. Why not?
Look, I think, first of all, if you're the NFL and you are trying to figure out the huge problem you have with the disparity amongst minorities that are either in the head coaching or front office positions, I think what you need to do is create a real path. And the way you start that is by actually having this conversation with the few minorities you do have within the NFL ranks in either of those positions and ask them what they think is best. And it all starts really with the coaching ranks, in my estimation, as far as the head coaching path. Clearly, if you look at the guys, the majority of the guys who end up becoming head coaches, okay, as far as their positions are concerned, prior to becoming coordinators, it's usually offensive line is the most, along with quarterback's coach.
Correct.
Okay? And I think that if you look at those two positions, there's not a lot of minority coaches, right, that actually coach those positions for whatever reason. And I think
whatever reason is the real issue, George, because this isn't new. In other words,
no.
What we've been hearing for a while now is that there are not enough minority coaches in positions of offensive coordinator, quarterback's coach, and that tends to be where head coaches come from. But this is a conversation that's been ongoing for a long time, and it's actually... they're going backwards. The
yes.
more they talk about it, the worse it's actually getting. Only three of the last 20 jobs have been filled by minority candidates.
So all week I've been trying to tell people this phrase, read the room, right? And whether it was Blake Snell, who, by the way, you know, I'm not anti-player or anti-labor with him. I'm just anti, you know, the messaging, which is read the room, understand the circumstances, and if you're going to argue about money, do it in private. Don't do it in
public. Totally
yes,
agree.
Absolutely.
Totally
don't do
agree.
It
in public, because that's a losing proposition. It always has been. It always will be, especially right now. Same thing with this. If you're the NFL, read the room. Do you honestly think that any minority wants to sit there and feel like the owner needs to be incentivized to hire them? That's not the way that any minority would want to come aboard. They want to feel like they have a legit path to get to their goal. And what we discussed there, and I think a lot of that starts with the coaching staffs, right? If you are a coach, you need to figure out, hey man, who is the best guy that can teach this position for me? And it can't just be your buddy or your son, which, by the way, that happens way more than we really talk about.
Particularly at the executive level, yeah.
Yeah, the nepotism angle from a coaching staff perspective and an executive level happens all the time. Now, from a front office perspective, that's really on the owners, okay? People historically have generally been more comfortable with people that look and feel and sound like them. There are a few exceptions to that rule, clearly. But I do think that we need to get beyond that and hire someone based on their credentials. And the Rooneys obviously have been a group that have done that and led the way historically in the NFL with that. And there needs to be more of that.
But, George, I say all the talking hasn't made any difference. We've been talking about this forever, and nothing has changed.
I wanted to ask you guys is, do you think, George, you've said this is not the best plan for the NFL. But do you guys, disagree that they should do something? Because the Rooney Rule's not working.
Yes, I think that, but the Rooney Rule shouldn't just be for head coaches, John. The Rooney Rule should be for position coaches, too.
I wonder, though, if you make the Rooney Rule for position coaches, here's my issue with the Rooney Rule, is what it turned into was a lot of people getting phone calls. Like, Mace, remember T. Martin?
Yeah.
You know, who's like a position coach somewhere.
Art Shell got a lot of those calls.
Getting calls to be a head coach. And those were token calls.
John, yeah, but here's what I will tell you. As someone who worked very closely with Herm Edwards when I worked in Bristol, okay? And he said that rule worked because it got him, it got Mike Tomlin, it got Denny Green opportunities to get in the room. And once you get in the room, someone in there's like, wait a second. That guy, you know, he may not be the right hire right now, but when someone else needs a hire, because let's face it, the whole league is incestuous. All of sports is incestuous. They bounce around from team to team to team, all these executives. And eventually they're like, wait a second, let's bring him in because I liked what he had to say in this particular meeting when I wasn't making the decisions per se. And then that's how this trickles along.
Right. But that novelty's worn off, George. I mean, right, that, but the novelty why, of, I
but
mean,
George,
how many
your
jobs
idea
does
is
Eric
good.
The
your
enemy I, have to
but,
interview
but that's
for?
Why you need it for position coaches too, Mace.
Yeah. George, I like your idea. And Mace, Eric Bieniemy has a troubled history when he was young. And
why does he continue to get interviewed? He got interviewed for three jobs last year. It's because he was the token Rooney Rule guy for last year.
But that doesn't mean that Eric Bieniemy wouldn't be a great head coach now. You're a different you're a different guy at 50 than you were at 20.
Totally agree, you know? But everybody's calling him in and nobody's hiring him. That's the problem. I mean, I think that there's a lot of merit in this. I mean, affirmative action played an important role in the advancement of people of color in this country for many years. And honestly, George, you said you wouldn't want to be incentivized. You don't want people to be incentivized to hire you. That happens. That goes on. I mean, look at local television news. Look at all sorts of businesses.
Yeah, that's the best example.
No, incentivized to hire people of color, okay.
Okay, but here's what I would say about television news, for example. You are incentivized because you want it to reflect your community, because then more people of that particular community may tune into your programming, which then incentivizes you financially. All I'm saying is that's different than giving people draft picks. Like that comes across
as weird. Yeah.
That comes across as an actual exchange. Like that seems ridiculous.
But if I'm that guy that gets that opportunity, it's about the opportunity. It's not about how I got there. It's about getting on the stage and getting a chance to prove myself. I don't really care if somebody moved up draft picks
to
get me.
But Mace, I think you're focusing on the wrong part. The part of that needs to be focused on is the path. And what you need to do is expand the path. If you expand the path, then more people will get those opportunities.
Yeah,
it's
going
to be interesting to see how, you know, first of all, they have to vote on it. George, I don't think it's either. I think they specifically leaked it to Jim Trotter to start this debate.
Oh, you're 100% right, and it's a trial balloon, in essence.
Right.
And it was done on a Friday for a reason, too.
but I also think it's a see-we're-trying-to-do-something move by the NFL.
You're right.
I don't think the NFL
right.
is particularly serious about addressing this issue, but this is an opportunity for them to say, look, we at least tried.
Yeah, well, you're right.
But I agree, has no chance of passing. It's too aggressive. It's too aggressive.
George, do you think, by the way, can you hang around, George?
Yeah, of course.
Lindsay, can we got open segment, right?
Yeah.
Do you want me to call Jeff Passan to join us?
No.
No, thank you.
He's now.
We're a Bob Nightingale show.
Hey, George, read the room. He's not welcome here.
Exactly. Read the room.
You know what, boys? Can I call you back? I actually have to grab this.
Oh, yeah. Call us right back, Jeff.
Because I want to talk to Sedano about the NBA stuff.
Yeah,
okay,
sure.
Cool.
Let's do it.
All right. Mason in Ireland. It's Friday afternoon. By the way, BCAM is going to be with us, too, a little bit later on. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Okay, lots of ways to reach us. Our voicemail line, 530-ESPN 710. You can hashtag Ask Mason and Ireland on Twitter. Phone's always open, 877-710-ESPN. And you can email me direct at venicemace@gmail.com. A little bit earlier, Shams Charania from Stadium reported this.
The Lakers will reopen their practice facility on Saturday, I'm told, after conversations and clearance from the LA County government and health officials. The Lakers will do so on a limited basis. I'm told not all 7 days of the week will be open to players and personnel, and they will have to follow the NBA's strict guidelines. But for LeBron James and this West leading Lakers team, a team that was hopeful to contend for an NBA championship, this is one small step to some level of normalcy.
Okay, so that is very, very hopeful news. The county and the city and the state have all signed off on the Lakers opening their facilities on a limited basis, which is, if you're a Lakers fan, if you're an NBA fan, can only be viewed as a positive step. George Sedano is with us. George, we're making progress.
Yeah, I love it. And Rachel Nichols had Chris Paul on earlier today on The Jump, and he was fairly adamant that that he said that this is something the players want, that they want to get back, they want to finish the season, and he said it on the record. And again, he was pretty adamant when he said that. I was watching it on TV after the radio show today, so that all points to good things, I think, as far as getting back to basketball.
George, if they asked you, if they just asked you to weigh in on it, would you just bring back the playoff teams, or would you like find a way to get Zion and Damian Lillard and some of these other guys involved?
No, I would just bring back the playoff teams. This is what I would do from start to finish. Here's what I would do. I would bring back only the playoff teams because you're limiting the pool of people you're bringing back. I would have these teams then come in and do a training camp at whatever the campus bubble facility is going to be, Walt Disney World or whatever. Mm-hmm. That way, they're there for at least a couple of weeks. If there are any positive tests right out of the gate, right? Everybody has to get tested when they arrive for training camp in the bubble campus facility. And then that way, if guys test positive, they're not necessarily removed from games yet. They're just removed from training camp. And you could potentially insulate the group where you don't have as many positive tests moving forward.
The one thing that the this is Sam Amick had this today. He said the one optic that the NBA is concerned about is the view that they are using a lot of tests when in some parts of the country they can't get tests yet. Because obviously the answer to this is testing. It's temperature checks, and it's testing, and it's testing on a regular basis. But that's what they are concerned about, is the optics of them having a bunch of tests while they can't get tests somewhere else.
I'd also add data and information, right? Like, I think that as we go along, we're adding more and more to that each and every day into that particular bin. But to your point, I think that... I don't know if it was Ramona who had this in her story. There's so many stories now that I just forget. But I'm just going to attribute it to Ramona.
Woj just came out with a new one while we've been talking here. Oh. A new update from the NBA. But go ahead.
Okay. So there was talk about teams donating PPE and things of that nature and testing to their local communities for frontline healthcare workers. And I think that should be the move for all of the teams. I mean, in general, across the board, all 30 teams should probably do that. Take whatever test they need from the specific laboratory they're going to be working with, but also buy an extra amount. Let's just use 50,000 or 100,000, masks or pieces of PPE in general, right? And donate that to the frontline workers in their particular community. I think if you do that, I think that lessens some of the potential backlash.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how they put all this together and what the timing is and whether or not who they're going to let in the building. George, guys like me and you, we don't know if we're going to be in the building. I'm prepared for I heard Mike Breen do an interview the other day that said he thinks he might be in a studio at the NBA offices.
I think it's very possible.
Games.
Yeah, I think it's very possible that at least from our perspective, John, that we either do it from home, like the KBO group, right? The Major League Baseball group on ESPN, they're all doing those KBO games from home, the Korean Baseball Organization, and or we're doing it from a facility, whether that's the LAPC, which is the TV studio right across from our regular radio studios, or the Bristol studios or New York or NBA studios, like you mentioned, there's a possibility for all that stuff. I don't know what it's going to be like, but my guess is, if I were a betting man, the broadcast groups will not be there outside of the essential people who will be in the trucks, the director, producer, people manning
the cameramen,
cameras.
Yeah, that too. On Woj's article, guys, the one that just came out, he's reporting that on the Board of Governors call Tuesday, the league spent part of the discussion on the issue of having fans to return to arenas next season. So this is next year, not this thing we're talking about. And the NBA is studying how it could get creative, if necessary, with 15 to 20% capacity in buildings. So they're looking at everything.
Well, that would kind of be like the Atlanta Hawks, right? I mean, they kind of deal with that anyway, John.
Unless the Lakers are there.
Right,
the Lakers
sell
out every year.
Yeah, whenever the other team is popular coming into town, right, that's the case. But
hey, I'm curious. You guys are both basketball historians. Do you know who Kenny Sailors is?
Kenny no. Sailors. I don't.
Kenny Sailors.
No.
So Kenny Sailors is a player from the 1950s who it is believed, and Steph Curry is one of the people that believes it, actually invented the modern jump shot. If you go back and you look at old-fashioned video of the NBA and of basketball, everybody played close to the ground. And it was Kenny Sailors who was the very first guy to start jumping in the air to take a shot. And it's hard to believe, but it's absolutely true. Steph has a new documentary out about it called Jump Shot, about the life of Kenny Sailors. It's definitely worth checking out.
Okay.
It's a really, really cool movie, and it's got great archival footage.
Is Kenny Sailors still alive?
Kenny Sailors just passed away. They've been trying to get him into the Basketball Hall of Fame. They wanted to do it while he was alive, but unfortunately, who knows how the Basketball Hall of Fame works. They didn't vote him in, but there's still a big campaign, and Steph is leading it to get Kenny Sailors into the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Who did Kenny Sailors play for? Because the guy I remember, as I watched old video, like, clearly I wasn't alive, that I remember that I felt like revolutionized the game from an athleticism and a jump shot standpoint was at least the star that I remember watching as I watched back the old videos, Elgin Baylor, to be honest with you, playing like above the rim.
Bob Cousy, I think, also did it, but Elgin Baylor.
This goes back to 1943.
Wow,
he played for the University of Wyoming. They won the national championship at Madison Square Garden. They beat St. John's for the national championship. And then he went to war, like everybody did in 1945, came back and played in what was the NBA. Technically, it wasn't called the NBA, but he played for the Boston Celtics in professional basketball. And then sort of dropped off the map, moved to Canada, taught girls basketball, taught basketball up there, coached basketball up there, and people kind of forgot about him. And Steph, in his knowledge of the history of the game, went out and found all this cool video. It's definitely worth looking for. The movie's called Jump Shot, and it's available on all the streaming platforms. You should go check it out. Cool. It's really cool.
Cool. Hey, I got one thing for you real quick before I go. Bergman wanted to know if we should do, if we end up having a three-way tie where we're all 1-1, he's suggesting we pit the two teams in the final that have scored the most runs. Are you guys okay with that? Because I told him he didn't ask us any of this when we were making the rules. So now
let me make it easy on you guys. After watching my team last night, there ain't going to be no three-way tie. and my team, you know how many runs my team scored last night, George?
Zero. I remember, yes.
But
zero.
Zero.
So you're behind
this
in that race
will
anyway.
Take care
yeah.
of itself. Yeah.
Yeah. I think
if
probably
Bergman,
we're good.
If Bergman's looking for somebody to make a big stink, tell him to kick my team out of the league. They deserve it for that performance last night.
Gotcha.
All right. George, thanks a lot, man. Have a good weekend.
All right, boys. We'll see you. I'll talk to you later tonight. You guys have a great weekend.
Though. Oh, that's right. Yeah, we'll talk to you on Twitch tonight.
All right.
Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, 710 ESPN, Mason and Ireland. Brian Kamenetsky is going to stop by here in a couple of minutes. He's going to hop on, as Alan Sliwa would like to say, from time to time. By the way, I was doing the Kamenetsky brothers' late night happy hour the other night, and they described our crosstalk with Alan Sliwa as the 25 most uncomfortable minutes of radio in America.
Which isn't untrue.
Pretty a fair description,
yeah,
absolutely.
It's not untrue.
All right, so Rob Manfred appeared on CNN last night talking about the return of Major League Baseball and the steps to which he's taking. He says, first of all, as we were talking about yesterday when Blake Snell was shooting his mouth off, he's got great confidence that there can be an agreement.
I think that whenever there's a discussion about economics, publicly people tend to characterize it as a fight. Me personally, I have great confidence that we'll reach an agreement with the Players Association, both that it's safe to come back to work and work out the economic issues that need to be resolved. At the end of the day, however, if there's, you know, players with either health conditions or just their own personal doubts, we would never force them or try to force them to come back to work. They can wait until they feel they're ready to come.
Which would account for, which is basically what we were talking about yesterday, the idea that, Yeah. I mean, if guys are not comfortable, if they don't feel they're safe, if they've got underlying health conditions, nobody is being forced to go back and play baseball right now.
No, and I think people, they should be prepared for some star players not to go.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's totally possible.
I just think that some of them who have enough money and don't want the risk are probably going to stay home. So I'm not going to criticize those guys that do. The only reason I criticized Blake Snell is because I thought he ruined his own image forever.
Yes.
By making it about money and not about safety. Blake Snell's agent, I would tell him to be quiet.
And in a way, damaged sort of the whole approach. Bryce Harper was on Twitch last night. Here's what he had to say about Blake Snell.
Yeah, I love Snell. That's my guy, bro.
He said if someone gets it, they got to live with that for the rest of their lives.
He ain't lying. He's right.
He's like, I need my. He's like, give me my money or I'm not playing.
Hey, bro, he's speaking the truth, bro. I ain't mad at him. Somebody's got to say it. At least he manned up and said it. Good for him. I love Snell, man. He has a beast, too. One of the best lefties in the game, bro.
So there's Bryce Harper. Somebody had to say it.
So it sounds like Harper might sit out.
Yeah.
You know, because he's got $300 million coming to him. He doesn't need it.
Meanwhile, Stephen A. got word of this today, and as you can imagine, he was not happy with say it again? Oh, don't have that. Okay. Stephen A. went off on Blake Snell today. And I do think, what George said and what we were saying yesterday is, I used to, as a joke, John, just randomly ask people, you'll remember this, who came onto the show, what are you pulling down?
Yeah, how much money are you making?
How much money are you making? What are you pulling down? And I like that question because it's about the most impolite question you can ask, and it really throws people off. We don't want to know how much everybody is making. We don't want to hear about issues of finances. We don't want to know that Blake Snell is concerned about not getting paid enough to pitch, during a pandemic. We don't want to know those things. That's why you've got a union rep. That's why you've got a commissioner. All that stuff should be handled privately, in the shadows. Have those conversations. Those are completely reasonable conversations, but you don't have them on Twitch while you're playing a video game.
Yeah, and I think he probably knows that now. Maybe he doesn't care. Maybe he doesn't care. Honestly, the way he feels. I understand the player's predicament. You know, the owners are going to be around and making money long after all these players are gone.
Sure.
You know, now this year the owners are going to lose money. But there is no owner in Major League Baseball that is going to go belly up, that's going to go bankrupt. All these guys are billionaires. But, like Mark Teixeira said on our show yesterday, that all goes out the window with this pandemic because we've never had anything like it before. So I think a one-year compromise is reasonable. But is Blake Snell crazy to say, I want all my money? The owners are going to be, an average team in Major League Baseball, Mace, goes up in value. Like $100 million a year. The Dodgers last year, when did they sell to?
I think Guggenheim?
Guggenheim, like 8-9 years ago.
Yeah, I'd say that's
about right.
They
sold for $2 billion. Now they're worth over $3 billion.
Yeah, sure.
So there you go.
Snell's
math is not bad. It's just the way he executed the message.
And here's a little math. And Funch, go back to the Rob Manfred sound. How much will Major League Baseball lose if there is no season?
Yeah, the economic effects are devastating, frankly, for the clubs. We're a big business, but we're a seasonal business. And unfortunately, this crisis began at kind of the low point for us in terms of revenue. We hadn't quite started our season yet. And if we don't play a season, the losses for the owners could approach $4
billion. $4 billion, which is a crazy number. We said, if there are no NBA playoffs, Sam Amick reported that the NBA would lose $900 million. We're talking about gigantic numbers. And so you're balancing, and this isn't all about money. You're balancing safety and money, and that's what makes this a really, really difficult restart for the NBA, for Major League Baseball, because there's a lot of money, but you've got to put safety before any other consideration. It sounds like baseball's pretty far down the road. Talking about Nightingale, It does sound like baseball's got a plan in place that they intend to follow through on. They've got Florida and they've got Arizona, and those two states seem to have signed on. And it's not hard to imagine that the Dodgers will be in spring training in 3 weeks.
Yeah, and the question is, will they all be there? You know,
right.
Or will some people exercise what I consider to be their right not to, to risk this?
Absolutely.
And if they don't want to risk it, I'm not going to kill them for it. You know,
no, I'm not either.
There's a lot of people. You know, like, for example, I've said many times, today, Mace, is May 15th.
Yep.
2 months ago, we thought this was going to be the day that they opened up L.A. again. Remember, our stay-at-home order was supposed to end on May 15th.
Yep.
And I used to say that on May 16th, if I had the green light, I was going to I'm going to a restaurant. You and Lindsay both said, no way, not ready yet. You're going to ease back into it.
Yeah.
I think the same discussion will happen with players. Some guys will say, we had Max Muncy on. He said he couldn't wait to get to spring training. Sounds like Blake Snell's not going, you know, unless he gets his full salary. So there's going to be some decisions.
Yep. All right. Coming up next for you, Brian Kamenetsky is going to check in, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.